have been doing this full time for a decade, you know, and like I really have put like my heart and soul, blood, sweat and tears into this band. And to be able to do a tour like that when you're actually playing venues, and the venues alone, I mean, playing gorgeous historic theaters, places that are jaw-dropping when you see them, playing the Ryman Auditorium, you know, in Nashville, and playing the Fox Theater in Detroit, like places where, you know, you think about the people that have been on that stage before you, and it's just awe-inspiring.
That's Lara Hope. I'm Jamie Green. And this is Trading Force. Hey everybody, welcome back to another edition of Trading Force. I'm your host, Jamie Green. Hope you're doing well. We've made it through another week. Got hot, man. It got really hot in Kansas City. Like, it's bleeping hot. So, I guess it's summer. Did anybody else remember we used to have, like, nice Junes? Anybody? I mean, that's why people used to get married in June, right? But anyway, now it's just hot. Hey, today's guest is Lara Hope. Of Lara Hope and the Arctones. They're a great roots rock band out of New York. She dialed in. We had a really fun chat all about the new album. We talk about touring with Brian Setzer. We talk about Gretsch guitars. We talk about our dogs. We talk about a lot of cool stuff. So really enjoyed this one. She was a delight to talk to. And I think you're going to dig it and dig the album. So let's get started. Here's my conversation with Lara Hope. Well, I appreciate the time and thanks for being on Trading Force. I think a good place always to start is when people, since you're from the East Coast, and I always want to introduce people to new musicians around the country. I know that you guys talk about yourself as roots rock. So educate people. What does roots rock mean to you?
Sure. Well, you know, in the beginning, this started out, I was doing more of a traditional rockabilly band called Lara Hope and the Champtones. This is going back around a decade. And when the name changed and the lineup changed, and we started to kind of broaden our horizons in terms of the types of music that we were writing, it's been hard to break out of the pigeonhole of rockabilly, even though I don't think any of the rockabilly purists would really even consider what we are playing rockabilly. But I guess, you know, the average person that's not that familiar with the genre, you know, might call us that. So we've gone out of our way to really call ourselves roots rock and roll, just because I think that that does a better job encompassing the different types of music we play, the roots of rock and roll, you know, meaning classic country and rhythm and blues, and sure, some rockabilly and just old rock and roll. And I just kind of use that as a blanket term because we are pulling from all those places.
Sure. And I, you know, rockabilly is one. Remember the Supreme Court justice years ago that said that he couldn't define pornography, but he knew it when he saw it, right? I think with rockabilly, people like it's this nebulous thing that people really can't. I mean, everybody's like, oh yeah, Dwayne Eddy, and yeah, a bass player who's standing up on an old, you know, acoustic bass and stuff. But other than that, I don't think people really know how to define rockabilly, right? I mean, that's part of the issue. Like you said, there's the purist; those people are very serious about it, but. For the ordinary American, they don't really know what it is, right?
Yeah, you're right. It's true. Or, you know, for people that are like, what is it? Just explain, give me one person. I'll say like, you know, Elvis Presley. Not like, mm-hmm. Sure. And even, and certainly like his career spans decades and genres, but that's like something someone could hold on to that has never heard of Eddie Cochran or whatever.
Right. No, it's funny. It's such an interesting thing, you know, every guitar player I know, we're all Scotty Moore fans.
Sure.
And Scotty Moore nerds, because Scotty Moore, who was Elvis's guitar player, for people who didn't know, he really kind of defined the first kind of rock and roll guitar, a lot of those tasty things. I mean, I think it's him and Chuck Berry and a couple early guys, right? But it's a sound that has evolved into everything that we hear today.
Of course. And that's what we're trying to do, is like, we want to take those influences, but we want to put our own more, you know, modern and of course our own unique, as and of course we're not reinventing the wheel, you know, but we are trying to write songs that haven't been written already.
Right. And this new album's coming out, so this episode will go up on Saturday, so this is the perfect timing. This will be up about 5 days before your album is being released. The new album is called Here to Tell the Tale, correct?
Yep.
So let's talk about this. So did you record it before COVID, during COVID? When was this all this happening?
We recorded it right before COVID in January of 2020. We spent about 10 days in the studio and just kind of banged it out. And, you know, we intended on releasing it at some point in 2020. We didn't know exactly when. We were supposed to do a big cross-country tour in April. I knew at that point we were planning on at least having like a teaser sampler CD of some of the tracks to sell on that tour. Then that tour got canceled and we just kind of sat on the album until it seemed like an appropriate time. And now the things are starting to open back up and shows are happening and hopefully tours will be happening. And I think people are kind of itching to get out. So we picked the end of June. It's a nice weather here in the Hudson Valley of New York to do a bunch of outdoor shows.
And that's starting soon then, correct? You're going to start playing out?
Yeah, we started. We've played a few shows so far. And it's like really starting to pick up. Yeah, like last weekend kind of started, or two, I'd say Memorial Day weekend really kicked off the season.
So isn't that kind of fun? I mean, I joke, my band, we did the parking lot tour here last summer. Like if there was and you know, Kansas City, I love the city, but it's usually either just hot or cold. There's fall's nice, but we don't really have a spring. And so I felt like I was either freezing to death on asphalt or I was like burning up. So for you guys, I'm sure the itch had to be there, right? Like this is what you love to do and have that taken away for quite a while. So how was it when you first got to go back out? Was it relief? Was it joy? Was it just like, oh, I've done this before? Or what did it feel like?
Well, so two things, like when things shut down in March, we decided right off the bat to jump on the live stream bandwagon. And we have since done a live stream every single Monday night since March of 2020, including this evening. We'll have our like 70th episode or whatever.
God love you.
So we were playing at least once a week, and we have like developed a pretty good following of people that come in every week, and we're always trying to get new people. So that was a real reason to just keep us working, learning new songs, learning new covers, writing, and just a way to stay connected with people. Right. So that was great. Kept us sane.
I was just going to say, Laura, it seems like, and maybe it's different for you, but for everybody I talk, musicians, like I know how to play music. I know how to restring a guitar. I know how to book a show. I know how to do, business cards, merch, all that. But a lot of people weren't video experts and internet experts and stuff. So was that true for you guys too, where it's like this quick learning curve? Like, holy shit, we got to figure this out. We got to figure it out quick.
I mean, that's what we thought. Shit, we got to figure it out. We got to figure it out quick. But there was quite the learning curve. I mean, there was, I think there were, definitely episodes in the beginning where we were figuring it out. We ended up, getting better internet, paying more for internet. We ended up buying some microphones. I learned about StreamYard part of the way through, which was, where we stream. So it did kind of progress like to the point where it kept getting better. And honestly, it's still like, still not amazing, but I also think like there's something nice about there being a little bit of rawness. Like I'm not trying to do an overly produced show on a stage. Like I am playing from my living room to your living room, and we do strive to have decent sound. And but I didn't spend a ton of money, but we put some money and some effort and did some research to make it work for us.
Right. Well, it's interesting since you're in that part of New York. I think Daryl Hall apparently was a genius. He figured this all out with Live from Daryl's House, and he lives in New York, probably not that far from you. What, 15 years ago, right? And it was like this cool little thing. But now musicians, everybody, I've seen more musicians' homes in the last year than I'd ever could imagine, right? It's just kind of fun. Yeah, it's just kind of fun.
And you know what? I think that we're going to continue doing it for the foreseeable future. Once we start, we picked Monday night as a day to do it because historically Mondays always sucked and we always took Mondays off on the road, and what the hell does anybody have to do on a Monday? So where our whole thing is, we're taking back Monday night. We wrote a theme song for the show called Taking Back Monday Night. And so when we're out back touring or back on the road, even if it turns out that it's not every single week, I mean, even if it's bi-weekly or once a month, like as long as people are showing up, we'll keep doing it.
That's great. So where are some of the new fans come from? Do you like, you hear from these people and like all over the world, right? Like you get people, right?
For sure. I mean, like there are some diehard folks that are always tuning in. Like someone's from Michigan, some are from Texas, some are from Tennessee. And then there, I have people tuning in from hello from Argentina, from Italy, from the Netherlands. I love when someone just chimes in, just says, hello from Argentina.
right?
Yeah, so
that's
fun.
Cool. That's when the world, that's when technology can be cool, right?
It is cool. I know it's challenging for some people. There's this one guy who always likes to tune in, but he's in the UK, so he'll watch the beginning of the show and then be like, it's 1 a.m. and I have work in a few hours, so just wanted to say hi and catch a few songs, mm-hmm. but I gotta go to sleep.
No, I totally get it.
But also to finish answering your question real quick, once the weather got nice, after a few months of pandemic, basically once like June hit and we could start gigging outside, we did quite a number of outdoor shows last year from like June to till we couldn't do it outside anymore until November.
Right.
And then we really took another serious break from like November until just now.
Well, I totally get that. I mean, you have to do, we played a show. We could literally see our breath. Yeah. We were singing, and that's not real. Well, it's like, I was like, why am I having problems like this trying to chord?
Sure.
And I was like, oh, it's because it's 35 degrees. You know, not real comfortable for your hands or your extremities. So
the things we do for rock and roll.
Yeah, I'm into that. So I'm really I'm a guitar nerd, and I want to talk to you about your Gretsch endorsement. Cause that's freaking cool, man. That's really cool. And so the first thing I want to ask about Gretsch is, and it's the guitar for roots rock people, rockabilly people. I mean, they get into Gretsch is that like, it's like, that's it. It's like a lifelong, it's like a marriage that lasts, it seems like. Right. So tell me a little bit about what drew you to Gretsch originally and why you got the opportunity to partner with them.
Sure. Yeah. So when I mentioned earlier that when I first kind of started playing roots music, I was in a bit of a more traditional rockabilly band, and that was called Lyra Hope and the Champ Tones. And that name derives from my guitar player at that time. He is a luthier, and he builds custom Telecasters under the name Champ Tone Guitars.
Okay.
So, which is part of why I didn't keep the name when we split, because
don't give him free advertisement.
I don't want to jack his style, but he's a great luthier, and obviously I really trusted him. So back then, he kind of is the one that got me into Gretsch. He said, like, I know what we're doing, and I see what you're into, and I think that you should try out a Gretsch Rancher. Go to the store and try one out. I think that would be a good guitar for you. And as a luthier and as my friend, I said, I trust your opinion. You're also a big guitar geek. So yeah, I went and tried out the Rancher. It took a little bit of getting used to playing a jumbo guitar, because before that.
Yeah, what would you been playing before that?
I mean, before that I had an Ibanez, and it was kind of crappy, to be honest, but it was the guitar I got in college. And
right.
But also in the Champ Tones, I wasn't playing guitar out. I wasn't playing guitar in the band. I was just singing. I always played guitar like behind the scenes. It was when we formed the Arc Tones, and my husband and I also play as a duo. And that's just him on bass and me on guitar. So I started really playing more guitar. And yeah, I played that Gretsch Rancher for quite a few years. And so it made it into like tons of photos, tons of photo shoots, tons of music videos. And I started tagging them and stuff. And, you know, years down the road, we ended up trying to remember the order of this. I think we already actually, because we did tour with Brian Setzer, who's obviously like
Mr. Gretsch. Yeah.
So I do think that we were able to get the Gretsch endorsement before that. And that was just because, like I said, we were touring so much, and I went out of my way to let them know, like, we're out here, we're spreading the word, and I'm playing, and not only myself, but my guitar player, Eddie, who's like, I mean, my guitar playing is shit compared to his. Eddie is like a real guitar. I'm a decent rhythm player, but Eddie is like a real guitar player. Eddie has like dedicated his life to playing guitar. And Eddie's, you know, the reason Eddie got into playing guitar was from Brian Setzer. So for him to get to tour with Brian Setzer after spending every Christmas waiting online to get great seats for the orchestra show, for him mm-hmm. to get to go on tour with Brian was really like a dream come true. I remember when I first met Eddie, it was actually through like a first time I ever just put an ad out to the ether saying like, I'm looking for a guitar player, and it wasn't, you know, it didn't happen organically through friends of friends. And he responded, and I, of course, stalked his Facebook page a little bit and saw that he was doing some workshops at the guitar store. It was how to play guitar like Brian Setzer. I was like, all right, this is our guy.
Absolutely.
So he was able to also get an endorsement through them, and they've been great, and they've been very supportive. They've put us both on the cover of the Gretsch website as like featured artists, and we got to meet and hang out with a lot of their reps on the Setzer tour, because they have a whole Gretsch setup in the lobby every night where like they come set up tons of guitars and a giant banner. Like, so it looks like you can pose with Brian Setzer playing with him and his Gretsch and you and your Gretsch. So different parts of the country had different Gretsch reps hanging out. So we got to meet a lot of the reps, and some of them are people that we've become good friends with and stay in touch since then.
No, that's
been
great.
A nice partnership.
No, that's great. You know, I've seen Brian Setzer, I think three of his Christmas shows, which, so my dad was a big band musician, trumpet player, loved all the big, so my wife loves music, but she's not really, you know, she's not a musician stuff. So when we went to see Brian Setzer first time, and she said, well, and I said, oh, you're going to like the power of a big band. Like, it's just such a cool thing. And they seem like they have such a good time. So you toured on that tour, one of the Christmas tours. When did you tour?
Yeah, 2018. We did the whole 6 weeks.
And how was that?
Best 6 weeks of my life. Really.
So is it because it's the Christmas season and everybody's in a good mood? Is it just because you get to see Brian and his band every night? Is it just the camaraderie of common, you know, people that have common interests musically? What was the best part of it?
I mean, it's everything you just said. And it's just like, we have been doing this full time for a decade, you know, and like, I really have put like my heart and soul, blood, sweat, and tears into this band. And to be able to do a tour like that when you're actually playing venues, and the venues alone, I mean, playing gorgeous historic theaters, places that are jaw-dropping when you see them, playing the Ryman Auditorium, you know, in Nashville, and playing the Fox Theater in Detroit, like places where, you know, you think about the people that have been on that stage before you, and it's just awe-inspiring. So that, and then, you know, the sheer numbers of like playing for, you know, somewhere between 2,000 and 7,000 people a night on the Setzer tour. It's like, how many shows did I have to play on my own to equal to one night on the Setzer tour in terms of like introducing new people to our music and getting new fans. And I still have people writing to us all the time. Hey, I saw you on the Setzer tour and I've been following you ever since.
That's great. So, well, that's why really you have an opening band, right? That's the idea.
Yeah, it was really good for us. And, you know, I kind of just felt like, we have arrived. You know, I finally am getting a taste of like what this is like to really like quote make it and like really be successful. Not to say, I mean, I think any level of playing music in front of people and giving and you getting joy from doing it, it means you're successful. But I mean, in terms of like trying to do this as a career, that felt like the next level.
Absolutely. So did your guitar player, what was his name? Eddie? What was his name?
Eddie, yeah.
Did he geek out? Did he get shy? Did they become buddies? What happened?
All of those things. He definitely was. he definitely was shy in the beginning. Brian was really nice and approachable, and he started coming into our dressing room just kind of really sporadically, but maybe once every few days or once a week, he'd just knock on the door. And in the beginning, you know, we were all kind of uncomfortable. And when he'd leave, we'd be like, oh man, that was so cool. But the more he came in, the more we, you know, felt like we were becoming friends with him. And there was definitely one night, it was at the Hard Rock? It was at a casino. Mohegan Sun, I think it was. Anyway, Brian came in with his guitar and Eddie had his guitar on, and they went back and forth, like kind of a dueling banjos kind of thing. Like Brian would play this riff and Eddie would play it right back. And it was, you could just see, it was the highlight of his freaking life, you know?
Oh,
we took photos of it, and Brian, you know, when Eddie would play the riff back, you could see Brian going like, wow, I'm impressed. Good job.
Well, that's really cool.
Yeah, it was cool.
So, there's a lot to ask you about. I'm curious, like growing up, what did you listen to? Because I'm guessing that we're probably somewhat close in age, and you know, there wasn't a whole lot of roots rock on the radio growing up. So did you just find it on your own? Somebody in the family listened to it? Like what got you into it?
Really, when I started that band, the Champ Tones, back in like 2009, maybe. Mm-hmm. So I was in my early 20s.
You're much younger than me then. I apologize.
That's okay.
I could never be a carny to guess his ages. I'd be terrible.
So I mean, before that, I knew the heavy hitters. Like I was familiar with Jerry Lee Lewis and Richie Valens and stuff like that. And I really liked it and appreciated it. And I did growing up, I did grow up listening to the Beatles a bunch because that was one of the cooler bands my mom actually listened to. But it was, yeah, when I was approached to join that band, those guys kind of really got me into the whole scene and like made me mix tapes or mix CDs, it was back then, and showed me a lot of the B-sides and the deeper side of stuff. And then prior to that, I had been playing bass and singing in like hard rock, punk rock bands for years.
Really?
And they had seen me play out with those guys. And they're like, oh, we saw you out. We're looking for a singer for this rockabilly thing. Would you want to give it a go? And, you know, it was kind of then that I felt like, all right, this is what I'm supposed to be doing.
Well, you know, it's really interesting because I think you could make the argument that both punk rock and roots rock or rockabilly, whatever genre you want to talk, it's very much about the feel, right? And your dog agrees. And the emotion and that it's stripped down, right? It's not 1,000 people in the band. It's not overly produced. It's straight ahead rock and roll, right?
You have a good point. I agree. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I like that. And I like that about it, you know, and it's, I hope that, you know, I have a friend that owns a guitar shop we were talking the other day. He said, you know, business this past year has actually been great. Like pandemic year was my best year I had in so long. He's like, I think people are rediscovering the guitar. And I was like, all right, well, maybe that, you know, that means that there'll be a resurgence of rock and roll music.
Absolutely. So have you been here in Kansas City much? Played here?
We have a handful of times. Yeah. We usually play at the Westport Saloon.
Okay. That's right in the heart of the city.
Yeah. That place is fun. And they are really good at booking roots music. That's their thing. And yeah. I've been trying to think of the name. I know we did a live, like an in-studio radio performance at one of the stations in Kansas City once. It was a rockabilly show.
Very cool.
Rockabilly Mood Swing. I think that's what it was called. I'd have to look up the station. But yeah, so we've been there a handful of times and always had fun. I always look forward to going back to Kansas City.
Well, I tell people, I think, especially if you've never been here, it's kind of a pleasant surprise. I think there's like, I mean, we always laugh when The Real World was on, and one season they had the kid from Kansas City and they always would show fields and like farms and stuff. And we're like, what the hell, man? Like Kansas City's like the metro area is like 2.3 million people. Like, right. So I think nationally we're never given like a real shake. Like we aren't, you know, I would know my head from my ass on a farm. I've never been, right? It's a real city. So, and I think this is a great town because musically it's been a town that's really appreciated music for a very long time. I mean, you can go all the way back to, you know, Charlie Parker and Count Basie and all that era, which was a huge era musically. So that's cool that you've gotten to come out and see. But I'm guessing you don't, how much time do you get to spend though, right? You play the gig and then you get back on the bus and you head out, right?
It's true. And every time we've played at the Westport Saloon, I mean, we wake up so damn hungover. I don't think we could do anything else.
Right. No, totally.
they're good at that. Yeah, I would really like the opportunity to spend more time there next time, you know, if we can. It's so hard. Like you just said, you sleep, you drive, you play and repeat.
Yeah. I think Vernon Reed actually tweeted that very thing today because they're starting a tour up here. I have to ask because I'm fat. You're the second person that is married to the band, a band member. The other one being I interviewed Neil Giraldo, who's Pat Benatar's husband. And it obviously works for you. I don't think I could work with my wife, and I love her dearly. So how does that work for you guys?
Well, when we met, it was because my old band that I called Tiger Briss, which the kind of hard rock band that I was in at the time, we did some shows with Matt's psychobilly band called the Arkhams, and we ended up touring together. So we kind of like met on the road, playing gigs, going on tour. So I think right from the get-go, that was how our relationship was. That was how we knew each other, by traveling and playing music together. So it kind of, when we started doing it, when our other bands kind of started to take the back burner and we started doing it with each other, it just that it already felt normal at that point because that's how the relationship bloomed on tour. So I don't think we've really ever known another way.
Well, that's great. I mean, it works for some. I mean, it's not, you know, I think they've been married 35 years now. That's what Neil told me.
Wow.
So clearly it works for some, you know, I think it's interesting just because, you know, a van on a tour, there's no secrets, right? Like there's no place to hide any of your imperfections on either member of the couple, right? Where sometimes you can get away. So like you said, if you could make it work early on, I mean, you guys got to know each other really well.
Yeah, right? Exactly. And don't get me wrong. I feel bad for sometimes when our band members have to just sit in the van and listen to us bicker. And I apologize to them for all those times. And there's just, you know, sometimes there's no way around it. But pretty early in the relationship too, you know, we decided to do this duo thing in addition to the full band. And I remember we booked I think it was 8 or 9 week national tour, just the two of us going to places we had never toured before, all the way, like basically the perimeter of the whole country, and in a minivan. And we had a really good time. And some of the shows were great and some of the shows sucked. But when we got home and we still liked each other, we said, all right, I think we could get married.
Well, it works. It worked. Yeah. That's great. So I always ask people, and I've seen some of your clips up on your website and stuff, and you guys have a lot of fun. I think there's a component that lead singers, like, that's a huge component. How do you interact with the crowd? How do you get the crowd ginned up, right? I saw a quote where you said, if it's exactly like you'd seen it or heard it on the recorded version, like what's really the point of playing that live, that it's supposed to be more fun and interactive, correct?
I do think that.
And so I really dug your clips. So it looks like you guys are having a lot of fun. And I, you know, I think that's one of the reasons why this music has permeated for so long, right? That it's hard to not get in a good mood listening to it.
Yeah. And don't get me wrong. There is a place for sad music. Of course. I mean, it's just not where I live. I want to have fun while I'm doing this, and I want other people to enjoy themselves. And I am genuinely, like, if I'm having a shit day and I'm tired, and there's some of these Mondays where I am just not feeling like putting, you know, I'm sitting home all afternoon doing computer work, and then I need to put on a face of makeup and an outfit and like get into it as if I'm, you know, playing a gig. It is a gig, but you know, my point is like, I'm not always mentally there, but it always just takes like one or two songs and then I'm feeling it and I'm into it. And I am genuinely having fun because singing and playing music is what I think I'm supposed to do. And it's the thing that, you know, brings me joy. And it's something that feels very natural to me when I'm doing it. And especially now when I can't actually, I guess we're starting to, but when we haven't been able to interact with the crowd in person, the ability to have the chat going on throughout the night on the computer, I do stop in between each song and I read some of the comments and we go back and forth and we're laughing and we're joking and all sorts of emoticons and jokes and all requests. So it's, you know, I'm definitely feel like I'm connecting with the fans almost on a deeper level than at a live show, because I'm not always just shouting into the crowd, talking to people at a live show.
Right. Well, it was such a weird thing when it started, because I think that, and maybe it was different for you, but we played, I don't know, we did 3 or 4 live streams just because people asked us to, because, you know, everybody's sitting at home, can't do anything. That silence, like I really noticed that first time we did it, and it'd be like, it sounds like a show and you're playing and then songs stop and it's so quiet. Right?
You hit the nail on the head. That's the few shows that we've done in person recently, I've said that on stage. I'm like, it's so nice to see you guys and play in front of real people. Not that it hasn't been great to also do live streams, but that is the one thing that you just can't ever get used to, that you end this rockin' song and you feel like you really slayed it. And then, yep, dead silence. That is weird.
Yeah. And I don't know if you can get used to it. I'm glad that you're interacting and stuff. And then we had the thing too, where it was auto generating the lyrics on the stream that we did. Do you have that issue? Yes. And I'm like, look, and I'm like, that's not what he just, you know, I just play guitar. I'm not the lead singer, but it's like, that's not what he just sang. It like, it'd be weird. Anyway, it was strange.
That's a great game though. Sometimes they say the funniest things. Those are good for laughs sometimes. Yeah. But there was, I think, one or two live streams where my husband downloaded an app that sounded like applause. Then at the end of each song, you'd press the button real quick and that would sound like thunderous applause.
Like old time radio.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. That's funny. You need a Foley artist in your band. You didn't know that. Right. Well, it's great to talk to you. I really dug the album, and I love his music. I've been a big fan of it for a long time, so I really enjoyed it, and I'm happy to spend some time with you. I do want to know, for people that are getting to know you through this, most of my listeners are in Kansas City. I do have a few on the East Coast too, but so for people who are hearing this for time, I didn't see you at Westport Saloon. Is it your website? What's the best, is it Twitter? Is it Facebook? What's the best way for them to follow you guys?
Yeah, I'd say go to the website and you can then find links to all those other spots from there. But the website, you can get the show calendar, the music, the merch, pictures, everything. It's Lara Hope, LaraHope.net.
Well, I appreciate the time. I'll let you get back to it. Have a great show tonight.
Thank you.
And I will check it out. So it's nice to meet you.
Yeah, so nice to meet you. Have a good one.
All right, take care. Bye-bye.
Always greener, but I'm here to tell you that it's not. If you don't find out yourself, you should just hang it on the shelf. Convince yourself the world has gone to pot. 'Cause I'm here to tell the tale. Here to tell the tale. Yes, I'm here to tell the tale.
Lara Hope, everybody. Enjoy talking to her. Yes, show links. You know I do your show links for you. God, you can be lazy bastards, and you're going to still be able to click on it, find her album and her website and all that. And she got a lot of cool merch, too. If you're a merch person, check that out, definitely. So that's going to do it for this time on Trading Forest. You know what, people? We've been away from my hometown of adopted hometown of Kansas City for far too long. We need to start talking to Kansas City artists, and I'm trying to get more on. I think it's important. I love talking to people around the country and world, and great music is great music, but this town, man, I love it here, and I think there's so many great artists. So we're coming back next time, Trading Fours. I've got the amazing Sarah Morgan, who has a brand new album out called Another Nail that you can buy right now. For you folks here in Kansas City who like country music, you probably know who Sarah Morgan is. Super talented, has a great story too. She came to the house. She came to Shea Green, and we had a nice chat, sat down chat. Really enjoyed it. You're really going to dig it. So that's next time. So until then, go out, support live music. We'll talk real soon. Bye bye. Make a memory, one you won't forget. Crazy, but I'll call you alive. You'll never know unless you go. So hop on in, let's take a drive. Well, they say it doesn't kill you, makes you stronger. I'm here to tell you that's the truth. When you go to sleep at night, what you're feeling just ain't right. At least you're gonna know just what to do. I'm here. Here to tell the tale. I'm here to tell the tale.